was involved in the mega group. And so they're involved in all sorts of business enterprises and indeed in funding Zionist causes. She's now the commissioner of the New York Police Department. And this is the one who Zoran Mandani, the incoming mayor of New York, has said that he will work with. And she's, of course, a vicious fundamentalist Zionist, has addressed the ADL's conference, has denounced student demonstrators against the genocide. So this is the way in which this process of infiltration works. It's not just the oligarchs, not just the funding that they give, but the way in which there are Zionist infiltrators throughout the apparatus of government in towns like New York and in the federal apparatus as well. And that's the key problem here, is that the Israel lobby is not just Israel lobby groups, it's also Zionist infiltration across the whole society.
Do you think Mamdani was intimidated then into that decision? It seems a curious one. I think a lot of his supporters were very surprised by it.
Well, you think that that Mamdani's a sellout, or that he was always going to do that. So
interesting. Well, time will tell, I suppose. But Susan, I mean, what do you think the priorities should be then for developing a material anti-Zionist movement?
Internally, as Palestinians, we have our own priorities, in part to do with leadership and so forth. But we with the global anti-Zionist movement, I think across the board, all of us should escalate our activism, our speech, our direct action, boycott, resistance, strikes, labor organizing, and just resistance by any means possible. Zionism isn't just a danger to Palestinians, it's a danger to humanity on the whole, and I think people are finally waking up to this reality.
Well, that's all we've got time for today, so I'd like to thank our guest, Susan Abulhawa, and make a date to join us on Palestine Declassified next week, when I'll be back alongside David Miller with more revelations and information that you won't find in the corporate media. But until then, this is Chris Williamson saying bye for now.
You may cut off my breath, but never my faith, no, never my faith, it's my voice. You may chain both my hands, but never my soul, no, never my soul, it's my voice. We'll be right back. but never my soul, no, never my soul, it's my voice.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
This is part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a televised address to the Iranian people on September 23rd, 2025. As for the next matter, which is the third topic in the statements of political figures, the issue of negotiating with the U.S. is frequently raised. Well, there are differing views on this. As I have said, some consider it beneficial and necessary, some believe it's harmful, and others have more moderate opinions. Opinions vary. I wish to communicate to our dear nation what I have understood, seen, felt, and experienced over these many years. I also urge our political officials and those active in the political field to reflect on these words, to think about them, and to base their judgments on knowledge and information. My point is that under the present circumstances, now it's possible that in 20 or 30 years the situation may be different, but we aren't discussing that right now. In the current situation, first of all, negotiating with the U.S. government does nothing to serve our national interests. It will bring us no benefit, nor will it shield us from any harm. This is the first point. In other words, it's a fruitless endeavor. It has no benefit for the country, and it doesn't shield us from any harm. It definitely has no such effect. This is the first point. Second, on the contrary, there are also harms that are the result of such talks. That is to say, not only do they lack any benefit, but my second point is that negotiating with the U.S. in the current situation would bring great harm to the country. Some of this harm could perhaps be said to be irreparable. It would have this much harm, which I will now describe. The reason we say negotiations aren't to our benefit and have no advantage for us is because the U.S. side has previously specified the outcome of the negotiations in advance. It has declared that it will only accept negotiations, it wants to enter negotiations, where the outcome will be an end to nuclear activities and enrichment in Iran. This means we would sit at the negotiating table with the U.S., only for the result of our talks to be precisely what they've already decreed must be done. This isn't negotiations. It's dictating the outcome. It's imposition to sit and negotiate with a party when the result must necessarily be exactly what they want and demand. Is that negotiations? This is how the other side is talking now. They say, let's negotiate. And what they want from the negotiations is for Iran to not have uranium enrichment.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me. Thank you. I want to thank
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's a pleasure to have you with us on Iran Radio here in the capital, Tehran. Here's what's just around the corner in the next hours. Our next segment offers a moment of reflection and wisdom. Join us for Hadith of the Day, hosted by Sheikh Muhammad Jafar Danish. This program presents a hadith from the Holy Prophet and members of his household, Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them all, every day along with a brief explanation and commentary on the hadith. In this program, hadiths relating to a particular lunar calendar date or solar calendar date are presented. Then it's time to explore how to achieve a fulfilling life with A to Z of life. Sister Zainab James will present an Islamic Iranian lifestyle making use of the ayahs of the Holy Quran hadith as well as inspirational poetry, parables, and stories. Then it's time for the spotlight on the day's significant events. This daily program features a roundtable analysis and discussion of topical and controversial issues. Two expert guests provide insightful analysis. Don't miss it. Then it's time for Islamic Laws, hosted by Hujjatul Islam Sheikh Javed Akbari. This program focuses on Islamic jurisprudential rulings based on the fatwas of prominent scholars or maraji. Each episode addresses practical religious questions and explores common issues that arise in daily life. Next on deck, we have Hadith of the Day. Stay with us.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear listeners, salam. And welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day. Today we reflect on a profound teaching of Imam Baqir alayhi salam. He is quoted to have said, "Enjoining good and forbidding evil is the path of the prophets and the way of the righteous. It is a great obligation through which other obligations are upheld, rights are protected, and livelihoods are purified. Injustices are corrected, the earth flourished, and enemies are repelled, and societies find stability." So this is all about the great effects of enjoining good and forbidding evil, or amr bil ma'ruf and nahi an al munkar. So this hadith reminds us that commanding good and forbidding evil is not a side duty. It is the backbone of a healthy community. So what are they exactly? Because there are many misunderstandings, misconceptions that have happened in societies, even Islamic societies, about these two, because they are not done correctly. But when done correctly, for example, amr bil ma'ruf builds trust and justice in society. For example, when people stand up against unfair business practices, it protects the dignity of workers and ensures fair trade. Studies in modern sociology confirm that communities where members hold each other accountable respectfully and wisely tend to have lower crime rates and stronger cooperation. Simply put, when good is encouraged, good multiplies. But Imam Baqir alayhi salam's words also carry a hidden warning. This duty must be practiced properly. Unfortunately, throughout history, some extremists and fanatics and ignorance have misused forbidden evil to impose their narrow interpretations, sometimes even with violence. This is not the prophetic way. The Quran itself says, call to the way of your Lord with wisdom and beautiful preaching. Without wisdom, this duty can cause more harm than good. It can push people away from religion, create division, and even justify oppression. The thing that it has come to remove. Another key point is priorities. Not all wrongs are equal. For example, a society may suffer more from corruption, dishonesty, or oppression than from small personal mistakes. If we spend our energy scolding minor issues while ignoring injustice, we lose the spirit of this great obligation. Imam Ali salam reminded us that the most important forbidden evil is speaking truth to unjust rulers. That requires courage, wisdom, and a strategy, not fanaticism. So let us carry this responsibility with humility, knowledge, and mercy. That is how we honor the legacy of the prophets and build a society that truly thrives. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
The greenest spring I offer you, the sweetest bird song I offer you. They say that love strikes only once, that precious moment I offer you. Where is the rising sun? Where is the spring of hope? Where is the shining moon? Where is the firmest rope? You are my guiding light that walks me through the night. Your presence gives me strength, gives vision to my sight. Someday faith will increase, someday our wars will cease. Someday there'll be justice, someday there will be peace. Everything I possess, I offer you. I wanna be someone whom you can trust. Come save us from a world that's so unjust. Where is the rising sun? Where is the spring of hope? Where
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, mind your own flaws. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to A to Z here on Arab English Radio with me, Sister Zainab. And you know, obviously, we, as Muslims, we need to be, we're told that we need to be so concerned with our own flaws, with our own character, really, that we're not even aware so much of what someone else is maybe doing wrong or what they've said wrong. That's just the general attitude. Obviously, that does not mean that if something really bad is happening or someone's saying something really bad that's having a bad impact on other people, that we don't sort of then become aware and maybe sort of take action, as in take the person aside and speak to them at some point about it. Now, this is just the idea that, yes, we need to focus on ourselves when it comes to purification. Now, this is something that one of the famous martyrs from the Holy Defense abided by. So the martyr is Ibrahim Hadi. And so he, in particular, did not like or abhorred actually backbiting. And actually, all of us need to abhor backbiting. And look, backbiting is very prevalent in our societies, whether it's a Muslim society or a non-Muslim society, whether we're living in a Muslim-majority country or not. Whether we are Muslims or not, we somehow fall prey to this very horrible trait. And I just remind you, obviously, the punishment for backbiting is quite severe because it's considered not just a private sin, it's also a public sin. And Allah, in general, we're told it's not going to be forgiven until we sort of make amends in a particular way, ideally through asking forgiveness of the person we spoke badly about. But obviously, I just want to mention one thing that Ibrahim Hadi would say. So he would say, so if he noticed that someone wanted to talk about someone else's flaw, he would say that, no, we cannot, because we ourselves have at least 1,000 flaws. Welcome back to A to Z here on Arab English Radio with me, Sister Zainab. And also I'm talking basically about backbiting and just minding our own flaws in general. So as I've mentioned, the martyr from Hall Defence, Ibrahim Hadi, who would say that, you know, we cannot pick up on the flaw of another person, given that we ourselves have 1,000 flaws. And we might, and this could be actually a useful task. Obviously, you know, during Qadr night in particular, we are support. One very nice task we do, or that we can do, is to, in a sense, ask forgiveness. And I remember so if you do this yourselves and literally write down all the sorts of things you did, you think you've done wrong, all your flaws, deeds or words, and we should not ourselves try to distinguish between these greater and minor sins and think, oh, but that wasn't so serious, I don't need to write that down. This is one of the big mistakes. We should never take even what we might regard as small sins lightly, because they're the ones that then might also lead us to greater sins. And that could also mean that we're a little bit arrogant in front of Allah, thinking that, well, you know, that sin, that flaw isn't so bad. You know, Allah will decide what punishment is due to us and whether we've actually repented properly for our sins. So maybe do this task. It doesn't have to be Qadr night. It could be any time, because this just gives us an appreciation, like Ibrahim Hadi had, of how many flaws we have. And for sure, if many of us write down all the things we think we've done wrong, whether it's just in the last day or the last week, obviously we might surprise ourselves and might think, oh, there's so much that I've done. And you know, and obviously I urge all of us, if we're aware of things that we've done wrong, said wrong, best thing is to ask forgiveness of Allah as soon as possible if we become aware that we haven't. So, inshallah, this is a real reminder for all of us, and I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on Arab English Radio. And farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
IRIB English Radio.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring
event.
In Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. For decades, FIFA has hidden behind a cloak of neutrality. Keep politics out of football, they've said, while fining players for messages of solidarity and silencing protests for justice. But now, the mask has slipped. In a stunning act of hypocrisy, FIFA President Gianni Infantino has awarded his inaugural Peace Prize to Donald Trump, president of bombs, borders, and bigotry. The same organization that punishes a player for a slogan rewards a man who calls entire nations garbage, who fuels genocide, and whose legacy is one of global division. And the double standards don't stop there. While FIFA moved with lightning speed to ban Russia for what it considered the invasion of Ukraine, it has for years refused to even debate suspending Israel as it wages a documented genocide on Palestine. So what is FIFA's true game? Is it a guardian of sport or a political arm of American empire and its allies? In this Spotlight episode, we're not here to play games. We're here to expose them. But first, let's get more details in this report.
Players frequently face fines and bans from FIFA for expressing political messages, as the football governing body has long championed a policy of political neutrality. Yet on Friday, FIFA President Gianni Infantino awarded the inaugural FIFA Peace Prize to U.S. President Donald Trump. While presenting the prize, Infantino expressed support for Trump's international deals, including the so-called Abraham Accords that established formal ties between Israel and several Arab states without resolving the question of Palestinian statehood. Infantino has previously warned against using football to stoke division, saying that the political neutrality of sports should be protected. 2 years later, critics point out that he created a prize to celebrate peace and unity and then handed it to a president who called people from Somalia garbage just days prior and has advocated for increased military spending across the Western world. Trump also ordered the bombing of Iran's nuclear facilities in June and continues to arm Israel despite the ongoing genocide against Palestinians. Trump's administration has also carried out airstrikes against vessels near Venezuela. At home, the U.S. president has intensified an anti-immigration crackdown that has led to the detention and attempted deportation of non-citizens. Some advocates have been targeted for their criticism of Israel. A group of international activists who campaigned for suspending Israel from the world football have released a statement calling the award to Trump a shameful development. They also accused FIFA and UEFA of double standards over their failure to act against Israel in the 2 years of its war on Gaza, while swiftly sanctioning Russia following the breakout of the war in Ukraine in 2022. Infantino has refused to take action against Israel, arguing that football cannot solve geopolitical issues. The apparent preferential treatment of Israel calls into question the integrity of FIFA's supposed commitment to political neutrality. As FIFA continues to tout football as a unifying force on the global stage, it must now confront mounting accusations of hypocrisy and double standards that threaten its credibility.
Well, today we are joined by Mr. Ashish Prashad, a political analyst and former West Asia Peace Envoy Advisor from New York. And Ms. Leila Hatoum, editor-in-chief of MENA Uncensored, joining us from Beirut. Well, I'd like to thank both of you for joining us during this episode of Spotlight. Well, let's go ahead and start off with our own coin toss, shall we? First of all, Ms. Hatoum, let's go ahead and start off with you. I mean, this Trump award, how can FIFA even claim this, quote, political neutrality is sacred, while creating a political prize and handing it to one of the most disruptive, narcissistic, ignorant and racist political figures on earth today? And just by the way, for our viewers, these are the exact terms and adjectives that Americans, his own people, describe him as.
I'm not surprised at all when it comes to this move by FIFA. At the end of the day, all of the international organizations are shooting themselves in the foot one after the other, exposing themselves, and the masks are off. FIFA is the most recent one only. I mean, if you had any doubt, the IAEA before it, the United Nations, you name it. Every single entity across the world that is headed by somebody who's appointed by one of the big five countries, then you have to think about it this way. They are at any point followers of one of those big five countries or all of them. And at the same time, they have to humor the Israeli occupation because the Zionist global lobby is very strong and it controls everybody, be it through the scandals they have on them or other secrets. When it comes to Infantino, whom we just basically naturalized as a Lebanese citizen because he's married to a Lebanese lady just recently, you have to understand one thing. This guy is, at the end of the day, a salesman, and he wants to actually, what you call, stay in power. The best way to do it is to have a network. So he's working as a marketing person. When it comes to Donald Trump, again, this person is the one who controls all the keys at the moment, a crazy person who controls the world. So at the end of the day, FIFA, which has so much bigotry against the countries that the Americans are enemies with, or the Israelis are enemies with, then that's basically where you see FIFA distancing itself or basically approaching. When it comes to Russia, they were really, really fast in suspending its team. When it comes to the Israeli entity, they don't see, they don't hear, they don't say anything. And when it comes to the Americans, they will always kiss the hands and feet of the Americans.
Well, definitely, Ms. Hatoum, we're definitely going to be elaborating a bit on that specific point later in today's program. Mr. Prashad, I'd like to go ahead and move over to you. I mean, if a player took a knee against Trump's policies or even worse, shirt criticizing his immigration crackdown, they'd be fined. What message does this specific crowning of him with a Peace Prize actually send to its own players when FIFA's honoring a president who not only embodies these characteristics, but also has even mocked some of their home countries, such as those from African nations?
Look, I mean, it's, you know, firstly, thank you for having me. This is a truly shameful development, but it's not a surprise. I mean, Gianni Infantino, for the entire year, has been used by this White House to normalize their atrocities. Remember that, right? The biggest way to normalize atrocities, the biggest way to normalize the behavior, bad, good, whatever, of a nation, of individuals, of people, is to participate in cultural items, right? You've recently covered Eurovision. Obviously, football is the biggest sport in the world. And the White House has, you know, knowing that this World Cup is coming to the United States, has drawn in what my colleague Leila pointed out, a marketing guy who is nothing, wants the spotlight himself, frankly, as well. They've drawn in this individual to help them normalize the genocide in Gaza, to help them normalize this fake peace plan, to help them normalize any ceasefire, and normalize all the actions they've got taken forward. Look, many FIFA members, by the way, in South America, one of the biggest regions for football, might be attacked by this president between now and the next World Cup. What is FIFA going to do about that? Nothing. Because Gianni Infantino is aligning himself with this president and his political views just so he can share his spotlight. Now, you asked, what does it say to the people that, you know, people can't sit there, go down on one knee or protest the raids that are going on. Look, this has been America from day one, right? You and me know that. Like, it's just pigeoned differently, right? Whether it's Biden or Trump, foreign policy, domestic policy, they've tried to always separate culture from actual change because they know the power that culture can bring. That's why they crack down so hard. And I'll give you another example because people are going to go hard at Trump. President Obama, during the BLM uprisings in 2020, could have changed the course of the country when he wasn't in office. The NBA were looking to him to ask him for his permission to strike, for his permission that black people wouldn't work or be entertainment for the white population during the BLM thing. And he told them not to strike. Remember that. This is consistent from all American presidents when it comes down to it. Some will not crack down publicly, but they will privately shut down any cultural revolutionary spirits that athletes have, that countries have, that other individuals have.
Well, Mr. Prashar, I'd like to thank you for pointing that out to our viewers who continuously need to be reminded sometimes about what history has shown us, and we don't want to just focus on today. Ms. Hatoum, let me move over back to you, and let's, of course, bring in Israel, the double standards, and the geopolitics. Now, again, this is something we always have to pop up in any discussion. FIFA statutes prohibits the membership for entities that are not independent. Given Israel's control over movement, the infrastructure, and even the lives of the Palestinian footballers, how can the Israel Football Association even be considered independent?
Well, they're not independent. I mean, if you actually want to implement international law, the Israeli entity itself is not a state. It's still an entity because it doesn't have fixed borders. So technically, under international law, it's not a state. It's not independent at any point. They are a force of occupation. The place or the region is still under basically multiple what you call frictions and back and forth when it comes to wars. So if they want to implement international law on one side and not on the other, that clearly shows their double standards. That's one. The other thing, not suspending their team is another double standard versus basically the Russians whom they suspended directly. So if I look at the whole situation, I see a very corrupt group, and this is not the first thing that actually catches my eye. I mean, if you remember, FIFA was marred by all these scandals when it comes to taking bribes from Qatar, from other countries, when it comes to voting to certain members or appointing certain members. And some of them actually stuck to its leadership and its members. So at the end of the day, when you have a corrupt bunch ruling one of the highest bodies when it comes to the most popular sports in the world, one of the most popular sports in the world, that tells you a lot of things. They can be bought, they can be actually threatened with scandals, and they will have to implement double standards based on who holds their cards.
Well, exactly. Mr. Prashar, I do want to come over to you. Ms. Leila Hatoum did mention something for the second time. She mentioned Russia. And just a reminder of you from something we had put in our report, that in 2022, just 3 years ago, FIFA instantly removed Russia from the competition. The principle was clear. A member committing a severe breach of international law cannot use football as a platform. Now, this is their own wordings. This is their own statement. Why does this principle not apply again to Israel? Infantino himself says, quote, football cannot solve geopolitical issues. But wasn't banning Russia precisely an attempt to respond to such a geopolitical issue? I mean, isn't that considered picking a side, basically?
Well, there's so many questions there. I want to answer them all individually. So firstly, actually, FIFA and UEFA are pretty consistent. They didn't want to ban Russia. I want to make sure everyone understands this. 12 European countries, and this is where geopolitics does cut into this, led by Sweden and Poland, on the second day of Russia's invasion, when there was no clear war crimes, when there was you know, just an invasion at that point. They called UEFA and FIFA and said they would boycott football. Now, as you know, Europe is the biggest moneymaker on football. 12 European nations, and they had guaranteed another 6 were going to join. We basically shut down the global game, in essence. And they forced UEFA and FIFA into position where they could make those statements, where they're saying, we're going to take this moral stand against Russia. But Infantino and Seferin didn't want to do that at that point. They only did this under the pressure of European governments, European sanctions, and European football federations that had a moral backbone for 5 minutes to do that. And the double standard, actually, is those same European federations, some who, by the way, say this in solidarity with Palestine, Ireland, Spain, Italy, countries like that, who basically abandoned Palestine here in this sense, right? Their public, their fans were threatening to boycott football, something that people do not do all the time. It is the global game. It is the number one sport in the world. Yet they were willing to do that for Russia, and they haven't done an ounce of that. And these are also, in Spain's case, a lot of good talk. A prime minister who says a lot of good things on TV. But if he boycotted football, think about that. They are the number one nation in the world with the best player in the world. Most people going to the World Cup want to see them, Argentina, Brazil. If they said they would boycott football tomorrow, FIFA would suspend Israel. If they said they'd boycott football tomorrow, they'd be out of the Champions League and out of UEFA overnight. They make so much money for UEFA. Now, answering the second point about that, geopolitics, sport has always been at the pinnacle of changing the world in geopolitics. Think about this, right? After World War II, the first things we not just hold Germany accountable in Nuremberg and other war crime tribunals, but we banned them from international sport for 6 years. Nazi Germany and Germany, West and East, were banned for 6 years until the 1954 World Cup. Closer to home in Europe, Yugoslavia, during the Balkan War, was suspended from football and international competition. A war, by the way, that the UEFA president was personally involved in. He volunteered for the Slovenian army and witnessed atrocities, witnessed massacres of Bosnians, and has spoken about that repeatedly, about how culture had an impact. So the hypocrisy is really there, because they're trying to remove football and other sport from geopolitics and politics, because it's become such a big business. Historically, sport has been at the forefront of isolating nations, committing war crimes, and punishing them and holding them accountable when they've committed crimes against humanity, like genocide, like apartheid, and the most popular, the biggest example is apartheid South Africa, where it isolated a nation and eventually brought it down.
Well, Mr. Prashar, I do, if you could please briefly answer your own question. You were saying how the human rights experts and people have been demanding and urging the boycotting of the Israeli football. Specifically, we have the 2026 Football World Cup coming up. Do you think that will happen? Why yes or no? Why?
Well, so look, as you guys have covered, we launched a campaign with Richard Falk, Craig McIver, other former UN commissioners called Game Over Israel. And we never focused on FIFA. We have no intention of trying to get them thrown out of FIFA. The reality is, if you want to end Israeli football, you need to get them thrown out of UEFA. And I'll tell you why. Fundamentally, like Leila said, like you have introed, there's no way FIFA are going to kick Israel out of football. What, fundamentally, because they're aligned with US foreign policy, and Gianni Infantino is so bent that everybody knows it at this point, right? He was actually Israel's pick for the job. UEFA, on the other hand, is where Israel plays 90% of its football. They play in the Champions League, the Europa League, the Conference League. Israel's federation is housed within UEFA, which is ironic given they're a Middle East nation. But also, their international competitions, the Nations League, the European Championships, that is where they make all their money. And here's the kicker, they also get a subsidy from UEFA to keep the league running. Because unlike the Premier League and La Liga, and this is not just a knock on the Israeli league. Like, no one watches Hungarian football internationally. No one watches Polish football. They get a subsidy from the big leagues who survive. And what we're trying to do with Game Over Israel, and what we think we will achieve in January, is UEFA actually suspending Israel, because we have run this campaign since September, and it's, you know, clear that Israel has no intention of following this fake peace plan that Donald Trump has. But also, legally, we are taking them to court in Switzerland, where they're in breach of international law, because they've actually encroached on Asian football territory by having occupied teams in the occupied territory participating in the Israeli Football League. Secondly, and this is good, unfortunately, it always comes down to money. UEFA only get a tax exemption in Switzerland if they continue to promote peace. Now, figure that. You get a tax exemption if you promote peace. Now, while Israel participates under the UEFA banner and has teams in the occupied territory, they're in breach of their own tax exemption. And that is what we're going after.
Very interesting. Getting taxed when you promote peace, protesting at peace, and you get detained and arrested. There's so many things going on in this world. It's become insane. Ms. Hatoum, let's go ahead and take it a bit step further. I mean, the Palestinian footballers on the ground, they have been killed. Their stadiums have been damaged. Traveling just for matches has been made basically impossible. At what point can FIFA's inaction actually become complicity in this destruction and genocide?
Oh, it has been complicit since long time ago. I mean, remember, like, the whole attack against Palestinian footballers didn't start 2 years ago with this war, October 7, 2023, until today. It started way before, when the Israeli snipers were targeting the knees of Palestinian footballers on the ground, be it in Gaza or the West Bank. They were targeting future footballers when they were shooting little children in their knees as well. So at the end of the day, when you look at the whole situation, the Israeli occupation was practicing the act of taking out future football players and current football players at that time through sniping their knees. And FIFA didn't do anything. There were lots of complaints that were lodged, even by the PA itself. And PA is like, it lacks action at most of the time. And the FIFA and UEFA and anybody else, they didn't move. And I disagree with our colleague over here when it comes to possible action being taken in January. I don't see the Spaniards moving. The Spaniards actually promised to protect the flotilla at one point or another, and they actually didn't send their own navy to protect the flotilla. The Spaniards could have easily lodged a complaint to UEFA, and the La Liga is one of the biggest in UEFA, in Europe's basically federation for football. And they haven't done anything. The Italians, they're not going to do anything, and the Italian league is very big. When it comes to the French league is very big. They're not going to do any action against the Israelis. So who's left? The Irish are going to move anything? The Germans? I highly doubt that the Germans are going to take action. The Nazi Germany today basically supports the Zionist Israeli entity. That's why I call them the Zionazis and the Nazi Zionists. So at the end of the day, I highly doubt that there will be any action on a collective level from UEFA, but possibly from smaller countries within Europe, they could basically threaten and basically boycott playing games with the Israelis. I do bet that UEFA is going to actually implement fines on them and call them anti-Semitic itself.
Well, on that, we have a few more minutes left. I would like to go ahead and cross back over to Mr. Prashar. Mr. Prashar, I mean, ultimately, who is FIFA for? Is it for the global majority of players and fans who actually gather from around the world, no matter your nationality, no matter your culture, no matter your religion, just to sit, to enjoy a good match? Or has it actually become for the politicians, for the corporations it now so openly serves?
Firstly, I want to say I agree with Leila. I think football could have done something like they did for Russia. So I don't disagree. Spain, Italy, no, they're not going to do what they did against Russia. But what I want to say is that, unfortunately, because nobody's going to do anything, it is down to football fans, and it is down to the legal action and other things other people are taking behind the scenes right now to push UEFA over the edge. But FIFA's gone from the public. The game is gone. The game doesn't belong to the people anymore. Unfortunately, look, there is ways that the public can reclaim the game, right, and show their power, right? You're already seeing across Europe people protesting, demonstrating, showing tifos and banners in behalf of Palestine everywhere from Istanbul to Paris to even in Germany, frankly, and they've been cracked down upon, but they still keep going. But the game, FIFA does, as an institution, is lost to the public at this point. It hasn't been that way since, I would go as far back as the 94 World Cup. The irony of that, the last time the Americans held the World Cup, was the beginning of the corporate decline of FIFA as an institution. After that, it became, you know, the home of politicians and Coca-Cola. And it will continue to go down that path unless the fans, frankly, reclaim the game and take this monstrosity back. But we see no willpower in people giving up the one, what I call their one escape from their normal life. That's the sad truth about it, especially for Westerners. They go to this game to vent. They go to this game to, like, escape from life sometimes, right? You think about conditions that people live in. I mean, you mentioned it. You know, even in the UK, you know, the quality of life right now is not great. And people go to a Liverpool game to escape that. Do you see them giving it up for a week or 2 weeks to change and can take back some power in football? No, FIFA is going to continue down the Americanization of this sport, similar to the NFL, similar to basketball, where it's become less about the fans, their experience, their relationship with the pitch and the game, and more about how much money they can rake in. Just look at the ticket prices. Some basic World Cup final ticket prices are $7,000. And there's no guarantee that even if you pay that, you won't be arrested, detained, and deported by ICE if you go to the United States.
Well, on that point, it seems I'm afraid we have run out of time. I'd like to thank both of our guests for joining us during this very interesting topic that definitely needs to be talked about more often. First of all, from New York, Mr. Ashish Prashar, political analyst and former West Asia Peace Envoy Advisor. And, of course, as always, from Beirut, Ms. Leila Hatoum, Editor-in-Chief of MENA Uncensored. A pleasure to have you both. Until next time, goodbye.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad Hossein's program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the studio.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. We have been discussing some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature in the past episodes, and we are going to actually continue along the same line by asking you more questions of that nature based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Let me begin our episode with this question. Somebody asked us, our neighborhood mosque was rebuilt a while ago. In the rebuilding process, a basement was added, which was initially used as a prayer hall, but was later rented out and is now being used as a restaurant. Is this repurposing permissible?
Right. Of course, this is one of the most frequently asked questions. I know that there are some mu'mineen, some people who want to build another floor on top of their mosques, or they want to create an additional space, allocating that space for any other purposes,
mm-hmm.
while that space belongs to the mosque and is part of the mosque. So basically, it's not permissible to repurpose the land or the part of the mosque which belongs, which is part of the mosque and which belongs to the mosque. The additional floors added to the pre-existing mosque,
uh-huh.
whether the top floors or a basement that formerly